What does it mean to be tough? What does it mean to be tough? Think about that for 8 seconds, and then I will take your answers. Last week, the guest preacher, one Trevon, gave you 10 seconds because he's soft. Today's theme, tough. So what does it mean to be tough? All right, somebody tell me, what does it mean to be tough? Paul?
Resilience.
If you're defining a word, use a bigger word, and you sound smart. That's a good strategy, my friend. That's a good strategy. Yeah, do that. Carrie. All truths are contained in the American Top 40 pop charts. When you get knocked down, you get up again, which is sort of a layman's way of saying resilience. That's good. Wow. Yeah, what else? What does it mean to be tough? He's got smart answers. What does it mean to be tough, Billy? You can withstand more suffering than others. Oh, see, so that's interesting. You can take more suffering. Like suffering somehow defines toughness, like your ability to metabolize, withstand, overcome suffering. That's good. Mike? You are chewy. You're a chewy person. There's sort of a visceral reality to that answer. I do not like it, but you're chewy. You're a chewy person. Yeah, lean over to the person next to you and say, "You look chewy." It's just, say that to your wife. All right, who else has brilliant answers? What does it mean to be tough? What's it mean to be a tough person? Think about people in your life. You think, oh, you know, that guy's tough. That gal's tough. What do you mean? What do you mean when you say somebody's tough? Sal?
You don't just walk away and choose love. You choose.
You don't just walk away. You choose love. You choose forgiveness. See, I thought you were going a different way with that. You don't just walk away, you push back. But Sally said, no, you don't just walk away, you choose love and forgiveness. So that's interesting. That's provocative. Robin?
Someone who's no-nonsense.
That's an interesting phrase, right? No-nonsense. That's a good conversation starter. You could unpack that. You're just not wasting breath. You're not wasting time. You're not wasting strength. June, what you got? Oh, you're unoffendable. Unoffendable. That's one of the first two leadership lessons we teach in the Leadership Academy. Leaders can't get offended. You're just not allowed. Yeah. Able to withstand the most difficult situations, right? You never crumble in a situation. That's good. Kent. You're a fighter. There you go. I mean, fighting. We associate that with toughness, and you're a fighter. Yeah, who's that? Francesca. Oh, you. This is interesting. You kind of quietly endure suffering. In other words, you're not complaining all the time, right? You just take it and you just walk through it, and you're imperturbable, right? And tough people are like that, right? We associate that with tough people. They're not moaning a lot, right? Maybe they're suffering more than you, but you just can't tell as much. Yeah, oh, you had your chance. Yeah, Rochelle.
We have faith over fear.
Faith over fear. That's a great answer. That's a sophisticated answer. Faith over fear. We say faith is trying, so trying over whimpering. Was it Tyler?
Engineering answer. A material's ability to absorb high stress and be
formed and come back. Yes. It's spoken like an engineer. There is an engineering principle. It's different than strength. It's toughness. It's ability to absorb stress, deform, but then pop back into shape, right? So you absorb stress. It does damage, but you don't care. You're right back on your game. One more answer. Who's got the best answer? Yeah, Nick.
Lacking emotion or sympathy.
I'm with you.
I'm with you. Lacking emotion or sympathy. At the very least, toughness means overriding your emotions sometimes and not letting sympathy get the better of your wisdom or truth or something like that. Yeah, so there's an edge to it. There's an edge to it. I like it. All great answers. Toughness is a word that conjures up a lot for people. And today, in our sermon series on cardinal virtues, we're taking a look at toughness in a way. We're doing this sermon series, it's technically on maturity. What does it take to be a mature person? And the biblical concept of maturity is completeness. If you've got to be a mature person, you have to be a complete person. Sometimes you think of being an older person or a more extreme person, but the Bible always defines maturity in terms of wholeness, right? You're leaving no part of yourself out, no part that you should have. We've talked about how Satan is a selective moralist. This is Satan's whole trick. Satan's whole trick is to get you to major on one virtue, but not the others, right? So you become really zealous about compassion, but you've totally lost track of truth or wisdom. We liken it to eating only spinach. If you just ate spinach, you could go a long ways because spinach is a great food. It's super, super nutritious, but you would eventually get sick and die. It's not whole. It's not complete. To contemplate completeness, we're doing a sermon series on this Christian traditional list of the seven cardinal virtues. And we are in virtue, the fourth on the list. Pop quiz, give me the seven cardinal virtues in order, and you might get into heaven. Yeah, Mindy.
Temperance, prudence, justice, fortitude, faithfulness.
Not quite the right order, but yes, so keep working. Temperance and prudence is typically traditionally prudence, temperance, justice, fortitude, faith, hope, and love. Sometimes love, they use the word charity. Kairos, but same. So prudence, we've talked about, is the virtue that makes you keep track of all the other virtues. Prudence means to think things through. So you can be truthful, but you must also be loving. You can be wise, but you must also be daring. You know, prudence is the thing that makes you think all the way through an issue or a situation. Temperance is the virtue, it's associated with moderation, but what it really is a celebration of enough. It's the virtue that helps you recognize what is enough. You don't need more than that. And if you cannot recognize what is enough, then you can never call anything good. And then that handicaps you. So that's temperance. Justice is the virtue that means that you apply all virtues equally to everyone. Right, so you might think of fairness or something like that. You don't just love your neighbor, you love your enemy. That would be justice, actually, in the biblical definition. What applies to the goose applies to the gander, that sort of thing. Fairness is a pretty easy concept to get your brain around, but applying it equally to everyone is actually really challenging for humans, and so it's a mature virtue. And today we're talking about the virtue called fortitude. Fortitude, which is an old-fashioned word that we don't use very much. The list of seven cardinal virtues, which were originally written down in Greek, like a lot of the New Testament, and the Greek word that typically gets listed as fortitude is andria. It literally means manliness. Pardon me, you know, it's not gender neutral. But most cultures kind of have a category for this. What do we associate with manliness? I'm not asking what we associate with men, which is a slightly different answer. I'm talking about what do we associate with kind of manliness? And a word that I thought about is like, you know, well, toughness, you know, at least classically that was the case. Healthy manliness, let's put it that way, has a degree of toughness. It kind of goes with, you know, men tend to be physically stronger, a little more endurance and stuff like that. Here's an operative phrase that I think helps me understand toughness and fortitude in the true biblical sense. And if you remember nothing at all that I say today besides this, that's probably okay. Most of you fall asleep halfway through anyway. But But the way I would define it is this. In life, weakness is not the problem. Passivity is. Weakness is not the problem. Passivity is. Actually, in Christianity, in the Christian scriptures, in the story, weakness is something that often gets praised, right? You have to know what your weakness is. But you are never, ever allowed to be passive in the kingdom of heaven on earth. A weak person can have fortitude, even if they don't have strength. So a word I like is the word force. You know, and it comes from the same root as fortitude. So a weak person can be forceful, even if they're not strong. In fact, forcefulness is how a weak person becomes strong, right? You go to the gym, you put some weight on the bar, and you apply force. And if you apply enough force, pretty soon you get jacked. I know what I'm talking about. Yeah. So force is really the virtue of fortitude, right? Not some sort of static strength. But are you able to really apply yourself in life? A weak person can be forceful if he or she has courage. When a weak person doesn't have courage, then, you know, they don't get in fights, they don't push very hard because, oh, they're weak, they're whimper, they complain, they're not tough. So you might say that forcefulness plus courage equals fortitude, equals toughness, and that's the virtue. Courage is required to be forceful, and sometimes forcefulness is required to be courageous, yeah? So fortitude is the habit of, like, acting on things, whether that takes courage, whether that takes just brute force. That's what fortitude means. And both sides of things, both the courage and the force, take practice. The Lord has just pounded this virtue into my brain. Probably more than any other virtue in my life, the Lord has dealt with me on this issue of fortitude, and it's really shaped me. I had a lot of occasion in my life to practice force, to practice fortitude, sort of courage and toughness. Maybe you have as well. Sort of the prophetic experience that I think about most in my own life happened when I was in my late 20s, and I was living in Chicago at the time, and it was just this afternoon. And maybe some of you who are old friends of mine have heard me tell this story. But I had a rough time in Chicago. I was in grad school. I was getting my PhD, and all sorts of things were going wrong in life. I won't go through them all, but I was struggling also with severe depression. At a certain point, you know, I was downright suicidal. It was a very, very tough neighborhood. Eventually, to get Christian fellowship, Sonia and I literally started a church in our living room. It was just sort of exhausting the whole way. And one thing I did to kind of help myself during this period, as I've always been really athletic in life, and that was very helpful for me, but I couldn't do any of my normal sports in Chicago because it's winter, like 9 months of the year in Chicago, people. And so I got into martial arts more heavily. I was studying for a black belt in karate one particular week, and I was taking a trip to LA. I had to go to, like, the head dojo to test against all the senior black belts in the country, that sort of thing. And there was the reading material, and there were, like, weapons that I needed to master. It was that sort of scene, right? And it was just a constructive, healthy hobby for me. So one afternoon in Chicago, I was sitting in our living room. I had a sort of this loft apartment, and the sun was shining through the window, which was rare enough. So I paused in my study of all this, you know, ancient Japanese literature and all of these weapons, and I was just sitting there. In the midst of all of these, I had all of these weapons strewn across my living room floor. It's sort of a hilarious scene, right, in an upstairs loft apartment in Chicago. And I started praying, and then I started complaining about the season of my life and all the things that had gone wrong and all the things that were hard in Chicago. And the juxtaposition was ironic, right, because here I was being a whimpering fool while sitting in this great circle of blades and throwing things and clubs and stuff like that. And I remember I said out loud to the Lord, why did you bring me here? And I meant, why did you bring me to this terrible neighborhood in this terrible city? and why did you bring me to this season in life? You know, I meant both. Why did you bring me here? And the Lord spoke. It's one of those times he spoke so strongly that it kind of jolted me physically. And he said, I brought you here to teach you how to fight. And then I felt like an idiot, right? He was like 3 feet away from me was like the sword, right? It's like, duh, Jordan, do you understand nothing? You know, I sort of felt the Lord's exasperation with me. And then what do you say in a moment like that? I said, yes, sir. And then I got back to work. But so many moments in my life have been like this. I thought to myself, why the heck is it so hard? Why can't I get a break? Why are things so incredibly unfair? And then I kind of hear the voice of the Lord or a memory of the voice of the Lord say, well, it's a war. Did you expect people to play fair? Did you expect it to be easy? Suck it up. He's never actually said that to me, but he kind of always says that to me, you know. You need to be tough. This is a virtue that you need, Lord. I have no doubt in my mind. I mean, I am 110% convicted of this. The Lord has gone out of his way to make my life harder than necessary. Absolutely sure of it. But I take it on faith that it is for my own good. There are a lot of great verses in the Bible. I love the book. I have one verse that I consider my life verse. This is the one that I hold to most strongly, and it's from Matthew chapter 11. It's Matthew chapter 11, verse 12. I'm going to read it in the NIV first, and then I'm going to read you the real version. I tell you the truth. Among those born of women, there has not risen anyone greater than John the Baptist. Yet he who is least in the kingdom of God is greater than he. And here's the verse. From the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven has been forcefully advancing, and forceful men lay hold of it. That's the old NIV, which is at least better than the new NIV. Here it is in a translation called the Weymouth Translation. That's how deep I had to dig this week to get a good translation. From the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven has been forcing its way onward, and men of force are seizing it. I think that's closest to the original Greek. The kingdom of heaven forces its way forward, and it takes a forceful person to get hold of it. I think that would be the best translation of all. The Greek word for force or forcing is barsitai, which is kind of like battle or struggle. And the problem in the Greek is that you could translate it either way. You could say the kingdom of heaven has been suffering violent attacks and violent men are constantly attacking us. You could translate it that way. Or you could say people in the kingdom of heaven force their way through things and they have a grip on it because they're forceful people. Which I think is probably the correct way in context. The kingdom of heaven is a place of force. The old translations, like the King James, say the kingdom of heaven advances by violence. It uses the word violence, which is even more shocking and hard to get away with today. Like, don't think for a moment that you can be a Christian and not be brutally tough. This requires a lot of toughness. It requires a lot of battle readiness and acceptance. And if you're going to get a hold of the kingdom of heaven on earth, you better be a person capable of great fortitude, great force, great toughness, great courage, that sort of thing. Life isn't a quiz, people. Life is not about having the right answers. Life is a war. And it's about forcing your way through to the right places. From Genesis onward, we faced opposition. We've had beings trying to kill us from the very opening pages. And those beings, I think, more than anything else, would like us to forget that we need to fight. They want to convince us that things should be easy. And I think the reason Jesus shares verses like this, and this is by no means the only verse that he uses, but I think the reason he gives teachings like this
is because he wants to correct the idea that being a Christian is only about being delivered or being saved. You know, it's not just like passively receiving what Jesus has done. God partners with us to get things done on the earth, and we need to jump into the battle with him. He fights beside us. We fight beside him. That's the picture that he's constantly giving us. And we forget that at our peril. And if we forget that we need to be forceful, then the world suffers as well because you're the salt and the light of the earth. You know, they depend on you for the breakthrough. In situations in which you have to fight to defend people, then being a pacifist is not a good idea. You know, you don't want to appease the devil, you know. You don't want to appease aggressors. You have to stand your ground. And that means a forceful living. So the question coming out of teachings like this is, well, are you a forceful person? Are you a forceful person? Or are you a passive person? And that's what a study of the virtue of fortitude leads us to ask. You want to be a good forceful person, because there are people out there who are evil and forceful, right? You don't want to do that. That's the sort of forcefulness that gives violence a bad name, because you can be violent in the name of evil, or you can be forceful, you can be violent in the name of good. Right? The forcefulness itself is neither good nor bad. It's the cause that it serves. And in a war, it's good to have good, forceful people. If you're not capable of standing your ground, brothers and sisters, you will be swept away. If you're not capable of taking territory, then others will never be saved. Another verse, a real favorite of mine that I read almost every time I teach on things like, you know, deliverance ministry, dealing with demons and stuff like that, comes from Judges chapter 3. This is an obscure one. Judges, as you may know, is the story of a sequence of great leaders that led Israel in times of trouble. And these, I call them great leaders. They were not necessarily great humans. They had their flaws, but different people that the Lord raised up at different times. And invariably, when the Israelites got in trouble, God would raise up some sort of commander that would remind them how important it was to fight. But here's how it's all explained at the outset of the book of Judges. In Judges chapter 3, there's just a record of the battles that Israel had to fight after it entered the promised land. You'd think they'd entered the promised land and the fighting got to stop because they'd made it into the promised land. Actually, no. And it says this, these are the nations the Lord left to test all those Israelites who had not experienced any of the wars in Canaan. So in other words, the wars of Canaan were the wars that Israel had to fight to get into the promised land. After the war was over, the Lord left some rather evil tribes in the area to constantly attack Israel. And they were really evil tribes. Not to be terribly judgmental, but these were tribes that specialized in human sacrifice, the industrial sacrifice of babies, the worship of gods that required, atrocious letting of blood and torture and all sorts of promiscuity and licentiousness and abuse. So not a healthy culture, right? So God left a lot of these unhealthy cultures in the area to attack the Israels. He did this only to teach warfare to the descendants of the Israelites who had not had previous battle experience. That's fascinating. The Lord went out of his way to ensure that every generation of Israelites learned how to fight. And to do that, he left enemies in the area. You know, the Lord could wipe out demons anytime he wanted to. Does it ever make you wonder why he's left so many evil spirits in the world? It is in your interest to learn how to fight,
Because if you don't fight, you don't develop the toughness required. And then it lists them, the five rulers of the Philistines. Well, we find all about the Philistines in the story of David and stuff like that. All the Canaanites and the Sidonians and the Hivites living among the Lebanon mountains. From Mount Baal, Hermon, to Lebo. Baal is actually the name of evil gods. They were left to test the Israelites to see whether they would obey the Lord's commands, which he had given their forefathers through Moses. If you don't get tested, you don't get tough. And that's the principle. And the Lord wove that into some of our oldest stories as a people of God. One of the things we discuss in the Leadership Academy is how to disciple people and stuff like that. And one of my crackpot theories is I've developed five pathology types, and everyone tends to fit into one of these types. Like when things are going unhealthily in a person, they tend to slot into one of five categories. And those categories are narcissists. You know what a narcissist is. These people that just are sort of pathologically self-involved. Perfectionists. These are people that feel they have to get everything right. And sometimes when people get healthy, they tend toward the perfectionist side. And it sort of, helps you to understand that so that you can help them. There's the victim mentality. Sometimes when things get hard for people, they slot into victim mentality. And if you see that, then there are things that you can do to shock them out of it. Victim mentality is really prevalent in the world. Orphan spirit. Sometimes when things go wrong for people, they start feeling rejected or abandoned. Orphan. I'm a classical orphan because, kind of the way I grew up, I was bounced around a little bit. So I'm always like, when I get really down on myself, I look like I sort of manifest this orphan spirit. It's like, nobody really loves me. Nobody really wants me. I'm looking at you people. and then the last category is weakling. And it's not like weak person, because all of us are weak in different ways. It's weakling. It's like a person who identifies with weakness. A weakling is somebody who sort of assumes the mantle of weakness as a protection. I don't have to play dodgeball because I'm just not an athlete, right? There was that person in every middle school gym class, right? And to sort of pronounce themselves weak is a way to keep themselves out of potentially damaging competition. And so weak people have a sort of this self-identity that does not allow them to contend for things. And they sort of grasp it, and sort of it's easy for that to become an identity. And sometimes when people get unhealthy, they go there. The weakling is in some ways the hardest person to work with because you have to convince them to contend, right? Unless they're willing to sort of like, come on, man, get up. Come on, put your fists up. Let's go. Contend in life. Get out there. And if they're just like perpetually cowering, it's really hard to do anything with them. And it's not that they're weak, right? It's that they're passive because they think passivity is a protection. I think that the lack of fighting spirit has killed more people than fighting has. As I say sometimes when I teach on the life of try, the spirit of has killed more people than the spirit of violence. It's sort of this passivity, this milquetoast, this weaklingness. Not weakness, but weaklingness. You understand the difference? Snap your fingers if you do, so that I know you haven't fallen asleep quite yet. Snap strongly. Yeah, not passively. All right, application points. If you understand this, if you can't fight for your virtues, then any virtue will fall through, right? If you can't fight for love, you're not going to develop the virtue of love. If you can't fight for truth, you're not going to develop the virtue for truth. If you can't fight for compassion, if you can't fight for justice, you're not going to develop compassion or justice for everyone. Fortitude is the virtue that kind of empowers all of the other virtues. How do you apply it to your life? A couple things to watch against as you develop fortitude. Number one, you got to fight the right fights. This is a pro tip. This is a tip for for Christians who are traveling the road of fortitude with other people. Weak people who can't be forceful all the time are often forceful only with good people who won't hurt them. Right? So they pick a fight, but they pick a fight with the best person they know because that's safe. So married couples, right? This is why spouses tend to pick a fight with their spouses, right? Have you ever had that experience? I mean, not us. Where your spouse is fighting you about something and you think to yourself, I'm not sure I'm the one you should be fighting. It's like, you seem really mad at me. However, shouldn't you be mad at Mike? Actually, Mike's a really good person. You probably get this a lot from people. People dump on you because you're good, right? And in Christian churches, you see that a lot. People dump on the good people. They don't dump on the mean people. Why? Because mean people will fight back. And so in Christian circles, you get a lot of people who are half forceful, right? They're sort of faux fortitudinous, if you follow me. So you have to be aware of that. It's the same principle, you know, parents, you see this a lot in families. It's the same principle why children rebel against their parents, right? You want them to rebel against the world, but they rebel against you. And part of that is they're learning to rebel, which is kind of good. But the other part of it is because they know that you're legally obligated to take care of them anyway, right? So it's sort of like forcefulness with a net. But what you want to do, Christian brothers and sisters, is you want to pick fights with the world. The problem with that is the world is nasty. People who are not Christian will reject you and abandon you and malign you and slatter you and kick you out, right? They're dangerous. And I don't mean to, like, you know, create division or anything like this. I mean, because, you know, there's grace and there's peace. There's all these things that we excel at. But just be careful of this trap that you fall into. I see this all the time. Zealous Christians pick a fight with people in their church over and over and over again. And I feel like slapping them upside the head, good and forcefully, and saying, actually, we're not the enemy, you know? And they will single out like small divisions that you have with your brothers and sisters in order to scratch that itch in your life for battle. But that's just such a deception. Are you following me? Do you kind of get the point? So that's a pro tip. These are just for people who've been traveling in the church world. Just beware of that. You know, pick the right fights. Let the little ones go. There's plenty of evil to fight in the world. And most of it is not in here. You know, not that we're all that. I mean, take a look around you. But you know what I mean? Fight the big fights. There are huge sections of the Pauline epistles about this. It's like, you know, live at peace with your brothers and sisters. You know, fight the devil. Fight the spirit of the age. Fight the world. You know, stuff like that. All right. Seems like it should be simple, but often hard. Pro tip number two for Christians who are trying to excel at the virtue of fortitude. Beware the word to. And this is just a great way to drill yourself on being tough, being forceful, being full of fortitude. Life is hard. Is life too hard? If life is hard, you fight. If life is too hard, you have every justification to be passive. Because, you know, if it's too hard, I mean, it's too hard. There's nothing that you can do about it. And you have to be aware of that, right? You're tired. Are you too tired? Are you too tired? You're busy. Are you too busy? And that word too, I think, is often where Satan lives. I mean to express that really, really strongly so you don't forget it. But I think too is one of Satan's favorite words. You know, there are a lot of people who aren't here today because they're too busy or too tired. No, they're not. They're busy and they're tired. But in a culture like ours, attending church requires an act of violence, right? It requires an act of great forcefulness, right? You got to, like, get up and shred your fatigue. You have to force your way through your busyness in order to get, you got to walk up that hill to get to church. I saw you. I was cheering you on the inside, On the outside, I was just trying not to be late. But, you know, but you get it. Beware the word too. Ah, oh, it's too complicated. No, it's just complicated. So I want to challenge you, Christian brothers and sisters, just to take the word too and eliminate it from your vocabulary. Well, I mean, you can't avoid it. Eliminate it from your mentality. 100%. The word too. All right. It's supposed to be hard, but it's not too hard. And at some point, brothers and sisters, probably by the end of the day, you will need to suck it up. So turn to somebody next to you and say, suck it up. Is that lack of sympathy? Well, I mean, it can be. Sometimes suck it up is lack of sympathy. But sometimes suck it up is kindness itself, right? Because God has gone well out of his way to leave enemies in the land. God has gone out of his way to make sure that we have fights to fight. And it takes a forceful person to get a grip on the kingdom of heaven on earth. Without force, all of your virtues melt away and you end up fighting fights that aren't smart. So suck it up is a good Christian blessing to give someone on occasion. Particular now, I think, and I'll go back to my, you know, the reflection with which I started off this sermon time. The world has just accelerated, people. The season of the world has changed. This is the time. This is exactly the time to suck it up in life. This is exactly the time to not give in to emotions or complaining. This is exactly the season in the world to not use the word to. Because, man, things are happening. The world has just accelerated. Amazing harvest is just pouring in. And you want to be part of it. And I guarantee you that after another few turns, evil is going to punch back. Suck it up. You know, a fight is a fight. And in this world, you have to fight. A verse that a lot of you perhaps have thought about today comes from Joshua, actually appears 9 times in the book. Have I not commanded you, God says to Joshua, be strong and courageous. Don't be afraid. Do not be discouraged. Suck it up, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. God will not necessarily fight your fights for you, but he will always fight with you, provided that you always fight with him. You got to get in the fight because that's where God is. He's in the fight. He's not on the sidelines. God is never on the sidelines. God is always in the fight. Because if there's one thing I can tell you about the Lord is that he is not passive. And so if you want to spend time with him, you must not be passive. Meet him in the fight. That's where he is in this world. And so I'll leave you with one application question for your inventory today, and we'll end with this. It's for your reflection. Where are you being passive? Where are you being passive? Where in your relationships, your work, your calling, your schedule, your family, your finances, your ambition, whatever it is, where are you being passive? You can be many things, people. You can be weak. You can be mistaken. You can be a failure, but you're not allowed to be passive. That would be a lack of fortitude. Where are you being passive? I'll give you 30 seconds to think about it. Anybody got something? I won't ask you to say what it is or shout it out, but it's like, oh yeah, I got a place where I need to not be passive. Just raise your hand where you are. It's like, oh yeah, I realize I'm being passive there. Yeah. All right, so let's do ministry time this way today, since the virtue is fortitude, it's force. If you want to meet the Lord in the midst of the fight, and if you want to be ministered to that way as a warrior rather than a receiver, then you can come up even before the ministry team does, because that's how forceful you are. So if there's something going on, it's like, oh, you know, I really need power in this fight. I really need the Lord to be with me in it because it's hard. Is it too hard? But it's hard. So if you've got a hard fight and you're tempted to be passive about it, come on up now, and then I'll have the ministers come up secondarily to pray for you.